people to our website. If you logged on through the computer, I will be advancing the slides, and at this point you should be able to see a picture of me, basically. If you logged on to the PowerPoint slides from our websites, you will have to advance your slides, and I will try to remember to give a prompt whenever a slide needs to be advanced. One of the reasons I put my picture up here is because one of the weaknesses of webinars is that you can't see everybody, and that makes it a little harder to communicate. And so this was my attempt to sort of help bridge that or compensate for that little weakness. Another weakness of webinars is that background noise can sometimes interfere. You guys are doing a great job. Apparently, it seems that everybody has muted their phone with a *6. To unmute, you do #6. I hate to ask people to mute because we really do want you to ask questions. We're going to have time at the end of the teleconference for questions. But if you have one and you really want to get it out there right away, please do not hesitate to unmute your phone at any time and ask a question. We really want to hear from you. There's another way that you can hear from me, and now I'm on to the next slide. And that is, if you logged on through the computer, you will have the opportunity to send us a chat message. Now, not everyone will be able to see the blue bar on this screen on their computer. If you called in and you accessed the PowerPoint from our computer, for example, you do not have access to chat. That's okay. You don't need it. It's just a little extra something. If you do, I want to quickly tell you how to do it. This slide shows you that in the blue bar, you can enter who you want to be your recipient. Often, it could be all of us, or if you want, you can direct it to just the moderator, that's me, or to anybody else who is joining our teleconference. Then you enter your message where we have the red prompt. Hi, I'm going to ask everybody as they come in to please mute your phone with a *6. We're now in process with the teleconference. So you enter your message, and then you just click the send button. And I'll try to do my best to monitor the chat so that if you send a question, I can pose it to Jack as we go along. Moving on to the next slide, just a quick overview of today's agenda. We're already at the first item. We're going to then get to the heart of the teleconference with Jack Schnelli's presentation, followed by question and answers and a wrap-up. I'm hearing a little bit of background noise. If people can mute your phones as you come in, I don't mean to silence you, but it for the benefit of all of us. Thank you. Moving on to the next slide. I wanted to give you a quick overview of the course. Now, this course schedule is on our project website, as are a lot of other materials. But as you can see, we're going to be meeting once a month for 5 months for 40 minutes at this time slot, 2 o'clock to 2:40. Starting next month, we're going to be meeting the second Wednesday of every month. And then after the fifth meeting, we're going to have a two-month break for you guys to practice what you've been learning a little bit more and have a follow-up meeting to close the course in July. One of the advantages of this sort of brief teleconferences over a longer period of time is that it gives you an opportunity between teleconferences to practice what we're going to be teaching you. And at the end of each teleconference, this one included, we're going to give you a field assignment to do, and that is essentially going to require you to begin implementing new care practices in your nursing home. Now, don't panic. We're going to start really slow and build steadily for two reasons. One, we don't want to overwhelm you and scare you off. And two, we know that if you can practice a little bit with these protocols, maybe tweak them to fit your nursing home and your residents a little bit better, you are more likely to adopt them in the long run. So that's what we're going to try and get at. It's a key principle of active learning, to sort of learn and practice and come back and tell us how you're doing. That gets me to the next slide, and that is two-way communication. The more we who study nursing home routines look at these nursing homes, we're realizing that in order for nursing homes to adopt research-based practices, we need to put more practice into our research. that means that we need to hear from you how it's going. We have what we're going to be recommending to you, what are often called best practice protocols. But there's also something called the uniqueness principle, and that, to paraphrase simply, sort of states that every problem is different, and therefore every solution is different. And this is going to be, we don't believe this is any exception. We'll give you recommended practices. We want you to try them. If you have to change them, if it's not working in some ways, please let us know that. That's really important information for us so that then we can all begin working on how do we tweak it to make it even better. So it's a continuous improvement process. On this slide, you see that we have a number of ways for you to get in touch with us. We're going to use these same methods to get in touch with you through emails, faxes, phone calls. In between all of our teleconferences, you're going to receive your project liaison, that's typically an administrator, a DON, or another designated staff member. It's going to get a coaching call from either me or our project manager, Kate Lindeberry, and that's just our attempt to find out how it's going for you, how you're doing on the assignments, what more we can be doing to help you. So you'll be getting that from us between teleconferences. We're going to have an online discussion group. Most of you should have already been receiving emails through this online discussion group. If you haven't, let me know. Then there's our project website and these teleconferences, all opportunities for you to talk with us and us to talk with you. Next slide. Course goals. I've listed three of them, but I really prefer what a lot of you wrote back to us when we asked what your goals were, and that was, if I can summarize, to make the most of the resources on hand to improve incontinence care for residents. That's really about it. Next slide. Probably everyone now knows that you get 13 CEs for participating in this course. That includes the time that we're asking you to spend trying to improve practices in your nursing homes. Bottom line is we're just asking you to make a sincere effort to try to implement what we're going to be, some of the recommended procedures we're going to be talking about in these teleconferences. With that, we're going to get to the heart of our presentation with Dr. Schnelly. Dr. Schnelly is the director of the Center for Quality Aging at Vanderbilt University, and he is an international expert on incontinence management in nursing homes. He's literally written the book on it. He's got numerous publications, presentations. A lot of what comes out of CMS with respect to incontinence management in nursing homes is based on research that he has done. He's the developer of the prompt avoidance procedure that we're going to be learning about. The new CMS items on incontinence management stem directly from his research. We really could not have asked for a more informed presenter for today's teleconference. With that, Jack, I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right, thank you.
We're at the next slide.
I want to also say that my work is very applied. I've spent 20 years, basically, at the Jewish Home for Aging in Los Angeles, California, trying to implement programs like this. My offices are in the nursing home, so I have direct experience with both issues that nursing homes address and issues with how the survey process looks at what nursing homes. I'll relate that experience to you during the next 5 or 6 weeks. Let's get started with an overview of incontinence management. You got the slide. Urinary incontinence is one of the most treatable yet prevalent problems in nursing homes. The prevalence part, about 60% according to the MDS, have urinary incontinence. Most of those people also have fecal incontinence. I'll talk about that in the future. We call it treatable because there's been multiple trials that about a third of those people, 33%, can become largely continent. If you do the right thing. There's not many problems in the nursing home where that high a proportion of people can significantly improve. I don't think pressure ulcers are that way, weight loss. I mean, there's a lot of people at risk for those conditions, and you can improve them. But not, you probably can't improve a third. With incontinence, you can. But it's extremely hard to do. I'm the first to say it. It's extremely hard to do because it requires a high degree of consistency from the part of nurses' aides and a very intense amount of management to make it work. So I really don't underestimate how difficult this problem is to treat, even though it's nice to be able to say it is very treatable if you can get it together to do it right. Next slide. Economists are such a problem, I think, because staff often do not know the most effective way to assess or maintain residents on tourism programs. I'll have lectures specifically about that. It's also a problem, many people have written, because so many residents have the problem, it's taken for granted. It's still frustrating to see it, but even in nursing homes I work in a lot, you hear nurse aides say to patients, just use your diaper. I mean, I think, you know, it's not a good thing to say that in front of surveyors, but nevertheless, it's said. And that reflects the fact that when an elderly, particularly demented person, is in a nursing home, many people have the presumption that they're going to be incontinent, and there's not much you can do about it. But the primary reason it's such a problem is that it's more time-consuming to provide toileting assistance to residents than to change them. I'll flush that out in just a minute. Maybe you know that, but my experience suggests that a lot of people think that's not true. A lot of people think that if you can make a person continent through toileting assistance, you'll have to spend a whole lot less time with them than if they're incontinent and you're just changing them. That's just blatantly not true. And if you think that, you're going to be, I think, communicating a falsehood to your aides. So why is it time-consuming to do toileting assistance? Well,
next
the two
slide.
Primary risk factors for urinary incontinence in a nursing home is dementia and mobility. The immobility or the mobility if somebody can't get to the toilet, like most incontinent patients can't, on a safe basis. If you can't get to the toilet, then you need assistance to get there, and that's time consuming. And if you're demented, or even a little demented, your motivation to ask for assistance is reduced, or the degree to which staff believe that you really are requesting something you want because you're demented goes down. So you see all the time people not responding to demented people's requests for toileting assistance because they don't know what they think what they're talking about, and they can't get there. The upshot of the whole thing, I should make sure you understand that at least in the long-term portion of most nursing homes, not post-acute necessarily, but in the short, long-term portion of nursing homes, very few patients are incontinent because of lower urinary tracting problems. It's an issue. They're primarily incontinent because they can't get to the bathroom on a timely basis and people don't take them. So, next slide. You know, to get to the cost issue, we've done a lot of studies in this. The projected staff needed to provide toileting and changing and two-hour incontinence care, if you try to do it with everybody, is about 5 residents to 1 aide. And that presumes very high productivity and a lot of management. And I'm presuming that many of you don't have that ratio. I don't work in many homes now in Tennessee that have that ratio, for instance. Why is that ratio needed? Because to toilet a patient, to provide toileting assistance to a patient every 2 hours or as frequently as they need it, takes about 7 to 10 minutes per care episode. Just changing a resident takes about 3 to 5 minutes a care episode. Roughly, it takes about twice as long to take a dependent patient and take them to toilet on a consistent basis to maintain incontinence. It takes about twice as long to do that than it does just to change people. And we can argue forever that, yes, but it should be done, it's better to be done, and so on and so forth. But just remember that when you get to the bottom line of who's doing this, nursing aides, you will be asking them, if they do it with everybody, you will be asking them to work about twice as hard or spend about twice as much time, let me put it that way, on taking people to the toilet and maintaining continence as they are now probably spending just changing incontinent people. Basically, you'll find, as we get into this, that a good patient for this program will only really require or request touring assistance 3 to 4 times in a 12-hour period. So it's really not every 2 hours. That would be 6 times. It's 3 to 4 times, but it's still pretty good frequency, spent once every 3 hours. Despite what your documentation might say, I mean, if you also really observe carefully how often people are changed, most people are only changed 1 to 2 times in that 12-hour period. Typically, when they get up in the morning, when they take a nap or have a bath, and then when they go to bed at night. We've done those observations many times, and that's the frequency. I'm giving you this information just by way of fleshing out the point that this is not a program that this is a time-consuming program, an effective program, but a time-consuming program, and we shouldn't lose sight of it. So what should happen if you don't have 5 resonance to 1 aid? Next slide. There's two excellent solutions to the problem. One is to target the program, the toileting program, to people who are most responsive. And you can do that during a 2-day toileting trial. In fact, if you have 60 incontinent patients, say, in your facility, this 2-day toileting trial will probably reduce the number who should really get toileting assistance down to about 20, or maybe 30. And the second thing that you should do is assess resident preferences, because despite many people's opinion that everybody wants toileting assistance, as it turns out, that's simply not true. Everybody doesn't want toileting assistance, or they don't want it bad enough to get it as frequently as you would have to give it to maintain confidence. So looking at people's preferences in a careful way and looking at their responsiveness to prompt voiding during a 2-day trial are the two solutions to focusing this program on the residents who are most likely to benefit from it, the residents who will do well with it, and to reduce the workload for your staff. Next slide. So is targeting consistent with regulations? Yes, it is. If you look at the interpretive guidelines or the new critical element pathways, there's language like what you're seeing in here. This is true for the new MDS 3.02. The resident is not on a restorative program like prompt voiding. How was it determined that resident could not benefit from interventions such as scheduled toileting? So this is basically saying you don't have to automatically put somebody on a toileting program, even though some people think you do. But if you don't, put somebody on a prompt voiding or a scheduled toileting program, and I'll explain the differences in future lectures. If you don't, you have to have documentation about that, and we'll give you that documentation. There's also references in the interpretive guidelines and other survey guidelines that is the plan, the incontinence care plan, whatever it is, consistent with resident choice and preferences. So my point is that, yes, it's clearly within the survey regulations and professional standards for that matter. To target a restorative or prompted voiding or toileting program to residents who can benefit and document why the others are not getting that, they should just get check and change or something else, and to document and only provide this program with residents that really want it, that's consistent with their preferences. Next slide. So what do you do first? You implement prompted voiding, which I'll describe in a minute, for 2 to 3 days. I think we're recommending just 2 days, and document the resident's response and preferences. By the resident's response, basically talking about how they respond when every 2 hours you go around and offer toileting assistance. They say yes, no, how long does it take them to respond, and do they go to the toilet successfully or not, and do they maintain dryness or not. We'll give you very specific rules about how to do that in probably the next lecture. Next slide. What is prompted voiding? Well, prompted voiding involves 3 parts. You check for wetness every 2 hours. That means physically you check is what the patient is wet or not every 2 hours. As you're doing that, you ask the resident if he or she is wet or dry. Why? That focuses the resident's attention on their incontinence status. Many of them will be inaccurate at first, but they can be brought to be accurate in telling you whether they're wet or dry, which will eventually save you a lot of time if they can be made accurate. It also gives you something to talk to the resident about in a very organized, specific way when you're doing this program. And finally, you prompt the resident 3 times to determine whether the resident wants toileting assistance. A prompt basically is, you know, can I try to help you go to the bathroom now? Why do you do it 3 times? You do it 3 times because many of these residents have depression problems, reduced expectations. So what you try to do is make sure that if they don't answer your question or if they don't say yes, I want to try to go to the bathroom, that you have made sure that you've given them maximal chance to say yes. Be quite frank, after you've had experience with the resident, 3 prompts are not necessary, but they're primarily necessary at the very beginning, before you know the resident well, and before you know how well they respond. I want to point out that one of the differences between prompted voiding and scheduled toileting is that in prompted voiding, you do not take a resident to the toilet or to the bathroom unless you can get them to verbalize that it's okay with them, that they want to go. That's resident choice, that's individualization. And that it should be described that way in your notes. If somebody looks at your notes, they realize that you're adhering to some of the principles in the CMS guidelines, which are very fashionable now and very salient to surveyors, which is, are you individualizing programs? Are you doing things according to resident choice? I know that brings up the question, what if the patient simply won't verbalize that they have to go? What if they're so demented that they cannot? Well, a scheduled toileting program might be appropriate for them where you quit asking them or you don't ask them. But I would suggest to you that you don't work with that kind of patient right away, because there's plenty who will verbalize and can verbalize that you probably should work with first. Next slide. So here's a case study example. It's, you know, somewhat typical in my experience. Mrs. Smith, who's 85, recently suffered a stroke. She was admitted to the long stay floor of a nursing home from a post-acute care facility. I'd say it's not yours. She's rated on the MDS as requiring level 3 assistance for toileting, transferring, and ambulation, which means she needs physical assistance. She has good recall and communication skills, according to MDS, and she is also rated on the MDS as incontinent of bowel and bladder most of the time. There's no other information about her incontinence, which was not a focus of rehabilitation efforts during her post-acute stay. Now, that's my experience. When we get a patient from a post-acute facility that's not our home coming into the nursing home, we very seldom have much information about their incontinence, the history of it, whether the patient's preferences are, what was done for it or not done for it. It's just a void, typically, in whatever records come from post-acute to the long-term care facility. So one question for this patient that should be immediately addressed about her incontinence. There's a number, and I don't want to simplify this and say this is the only one, by the way. This is the only one we're going to talk about for this first session. But one question that should be immediately addressed about her incontinence is, what is this person's preference for incontinence care? Next page. Now, why do I say one of the first questions that should be addressed? Well, you don't know. Remember, I just gave you the case. You know the patient is incontinent. You know the patient is dependent. You know the patient is 85 and they just had a stroke. They probably have a lot of problems. What you don't know at this particular point is, what does this patient want in regard to their incontinence? Do they want treatment or not? So what we're recommending is both before and immediately following the prompted voiding trial, because remember, that's the other thing I said you have to do to target. You have to do this 2-day trial. But before you even spend time on that, before and immediately after the prompted voiding trial, ask the resident the following questions. Does it bother you to be wet in your brief? Yes, no, or the other, don't know, no response, refuse to answer. Do staff help you to the toilet as much as you would like? Yes, no, don't know. Do you want to be helped to the bathroom more often? If no, do you want to be helped less often? It might seem a strange question to you, but we have seen patients with significant pain who really don't want the movement involved in going to the toilet. They particularly don't want the movement involved in going to the toilet if they're being moved in bed. Do you want to be changed more often? Yes, no. If no, you want to be changed less often. All right. My point is, if you ask this of people and you get the bolded responses that they say does bother them to go in their brief, they want it, do staff help you enough? Do you want to be helped more? Then clearly this patient is expressing a preference to you for a toileting program. And there's no question they should get that toilet. But this begs the question, what if a patient answers the other way? What if they say, no, it doesn't bother me to be wet? Do you want to be helped in the bathroom more often? And so they say no. They say they provide negative responses to these things. What should you do? Well, I guess it's your option. However, I think it would be dangerous just to take their preferences on an initial interview that says they don't want toileting program and act on it without doing anything else. Why is that? Again, many residents are depressed and they have reduced expectations, and I think you might be surprised that you will get these kind of negative responses. I don't care about it. I really don't want it. When you first ask people about it, that's particularly true if people have long-standing incontinence. I think the better option is to try to place them on the two-day clock of prompt avoiding, which we'll discuss in more detail the next time, where you actually give them the experience of having somebody come around every couple hours and prompting them and taking them to the toilet and offering assistance. And then after that trial, after that experience, ask them post-trial question 5. Do you like the amount of changing and toileting assistance you receive in the last 2 or 3 days? And if they say yes, then again, that reflects a preference for what just happened. This documentation that I just described would fulfill in spades every regulation that I know that CMS has about assessing residents' preference for incontinence care and designing a toileting plan that's consistent with their choice. I have seen very few homes that have this much detail in terms of documenting residents' preferences for incontinence care or for a toileting plan. Next slide. So this is a recap quiz. Anyhow, do we just go through this and provide the answer, or how does this work?
We're going to give this a shot. Hold on, give me 1 second. Wait, I skipped. For those of you who logged on, I'm going to try and show you, give you a chance to answer this online, and then we'll get the feedback. Let me see. Sorry. Okay, here it is. If you logged on through the computer, we've now sort of thrown this question out there and you can answer it online. And if you would take a moment to do that, then we'll publish the results. If you haven't, take a moment, if you access the PowerPoint from your computer, from the website, take a moment to answer this question. I can't see it right now. It says, there's no need to ask residents about their toileting preferences because, 1, it can be assumed that all residents prefer to use the toilet. 2, survey guidelines do not emphasize resident choice in this area. 3, residents cannot reliably answer questions about their toileting preferences. Or 4, none of the above preferences should be assessed. Okay? Just want to make sure you got it. Here's our published results. It probably should go out to you, those of you who logged on through your computer. It's a new tool for us, so I just wanted to sort of have everyone play with it. Of course, the answer is Jack 4, right?
Yes. I've got 6 out of 6. People are updating it now, so everybody said that.
Yeah. So they got that. Recap question.
Yeah, just do one qualification, though, is people are answering it, okay?
Sure.
Actually, somebody didn't put another one there. It can be assumed that all residents prefer to use the toilet. Well, you'll find out that's not true. It's certainly, we've done this hundreds of times, and there are some residents. Let me tell you who they are. They're people with a lot of pain, or they are people who basically have such bladder issues that placing them on the toilet really is not that advantageous. They can't hold their urine in between times, or they can't initiate voiding if they are on the toilet, and it gets very frustrating. So there is a sample of residents, a subsample of residents, whose preference is not to have this done. There's even families who would prefer this not be done with residents. People, you might find that amazing, but it's just our experience, and you'll see, I think, as you do it.
Yeah. Question 2, and then I've moved on to the next slide, and 3, I'm going to try and show you those quizzes. Get that, let's see, which one is this? Sorry. Oh. Sorry, forget that one. How much do they need to stay dry in a 2-hour period? Take a moment to think about it.
I don't see it up.
Well,
I don't see the quiz.
Did I throw it out there? Okay. On average, how often is toileting assistance? Oh, that's question 3. Wait. This is my fault. How much do they need in order to stay dry? Okay. There's the right question. How often do you basically, how much, in order to stay dry, incontinent residents need toileting assistance, how often in a 12-hour period? If you're listening closely to Jack's lecture, I know he threw that in there. This is a tough one if you missed that, and I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people did. But here's what we've got for the results so far, Jack, 3 to 4 times.
I thought that.
And I believe that's what you said, right, Jack?
Yes, that is what I said.
Yeah.
There is variability in the thing.
And I can also comment, this was in our quiz, and a lot of people estimated more times than that. We're still analyzing those results. We'll give you that feedback. A lot of people put 5 or 6 or even 7 to 8 times, so it's a little less than people think.
So let me talk a minute, okay?
Sure.
Obviously, there is variability, and some people do require more than 3 to 4 times in a 12-hour period. So 3 to 4 times is the average for people who do well on this program. There are some people who need it every 2 hours, which would mean 6 times, basically, 5 to 6 times in 12-hour. But very few who can benefit need it more frequently than that. Basically, if your incontinence is so severe that you need to be toileted more frequently than every 2 hours, it's very unlikely you're going to be able to maintain incontinence without some adjunct therapy to try to reduce the frequency of your voiding. The 3 to 4 times is the average, and it's important to know that because basically that gives you a perspective of how often your aides will be asked to do this with a patient who is targeted as being responsive to the program.
Final question is on the next slide. On average, how often is toileting assistance usually offered during the daytime to incontinent residents?
This is what it is.
Oh, I was going to say,
this is how often is it actually? And here's the choices.
According to our charting, it's less than one time a day. What I read in our charting.
They were hearing some voices. I had to publish the results. We are getting some background noise. If you can mute your phone.
How often do I wash? I didn't get a chance to answer it.
Uh-oh. I'll try to mute the... If we can keep the phones muted, that'd be great for right now. Any comments on that, Jack?
I'm surprised that nobody said, you know, 3+ times. Maybe somebody will add it to it.
We will, too.
How would we know it? Well, two ways. We have targeted patients who have good cognitive status that would suggest MDS recall scores above 2. They would suggest they have accurate memory. I've asked them.
But they're trying to say
how often they get toileting assistance, and that's basically what they're saying. They between 2, basically about a little over 2 times a day. We've also done it through direct observation. What we observe is that occurs pretty much when staff have time to do it or when they're doing something else. So, for example, when you're getting somebody up in the morning or when you're putting them in bed at night or for a nap, you might get an offer for toileting assistance. Where it's very difficult is to get an aide to interrupt the course of their activities during the regular work shifts, say at 10 or 11 o'clock. When they're not doing something else with the patient. What's very difficult is to get them to stop at that point, and they don't typically. Your facility might be different. Your facility's documentation about what people do are almost certainly probably different from that, because all the documentation that we've seen suggests that toileting assistance is said to be offered much more frequently to residents than the attack residency report it is or direct observations suggest it is.
Okay.
Anyway, the answer to that question is 1-2 times if you believe the trials that have either directly observed it or asked patients about it.
Thank you, Jack. I want to close. I don't want to. We're over a little bit, and I want to try and end on time. I do want to let people know what the homework assignment is. I mentioned it was coming, and here it is. And what we would really like you to do is focus on number one for sure, and that is. I have sent out that resident assessment form to everyone via the online discussion group, and I'm going to do it again. We'd like you to use that form to interview some incontinent residents. Who you interview and how many is your choice. But we would like you to at least get some experience using it. See if you find answers that surprise you. See if you find pretty much what we've talked about here or something different, and let us know how it's going. We're going to recommend that you interview, at a minimum, any incoming residents who are incontinent. If that's not very many, and it may not be in a lot of nursing homes, you might want to then look at recent admissions to your facility who are incontinent. And if that's still very few residents, then I would recommend that you interview any of your incontinent residents to assess their motivation and choice. You do not have to, this is a quality improvement strategy. You don't have to report it, my understanding, to surveyors or anything else. It's confidential. It's to help you improve practices. So this is really right now for your information, and it's going to help you target prompted voiding down the line. So I will be sending out that form. I want you right now to write down how many residents you think you can interview between you and your staff between now and our next teleconference, which is in 3 weeks. The reason I'm asking to write it down is because the simple act of writing it down makes it more likely that you will achieve that goal. We're going to ask you how many residents you wrote down when we do our coaching calls in between teleconferences. We're recommending 10. Now, that's a little bit random. It could be more, it could be fewer in your facility, depending on how many residents you have. The key here is set yourself a goal. It doesn't take very long to ask these questions, and it can really be an enlightening experience, especially given that many nursing homes never take this step. a lot of you have already answered our pre-training quiz. You have done such a fantastic job on getting those back to me that I'm really excited about this group. If you haven't done so, I'll send that out again over the listserv. It's also on our website. Take a few minutes. It's a nice educational tool, and we'll be covering some of those questions in our teleconferences. And then we've got two reading assignments for next week. It really covers the ground that we've just explored in this teleconference. Doesn't take much time to read these. They're pretty brief. I'm going to guess no more than a half hour. Part of your CEs are for these reading assignments. If you have any we'll be calling you between sessions. If you have any questions, I'm sorry we don't have time today, feel free. We will be calling you. Contact us. Stay in touch, okay? Next teleconference comes up sooner than 4 weeks. It's February 10th. Until then, have a great rest of your day. Thank you for joining us.